This is the Real Footy Podcast. Coming up, Geelong recruit Josh Jenkins is our special guest as we discuss the AFL returning to play, being back in full contact training, and how the AFLPA handled the fallout from the Crows' infamous pre-season camp, and whether there'll be an advantage for the Cats playing so many home games in Geelong. All that and much more.
Mackay to the wing position on the member stand side. Oh, Jesselenko, you beauty!
The Tigers are going to win the premiership in 2017. The Tigers have got home for the first time in 37 years.
Cox throws it onto the left. One last roll of the dice for the Eagles.
Read it best, wrong side for him, hooks a ball! What a ball! Sensational!
Hello and welcome. My name is Michael Gleeson, and joining the podcast today, Caroline Wilson, Jake Noel, and special guest, new Cat Josh Jenkins. Welcome to you all.
Hello.
Hello, Michael, Josh, Caro.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
The new Cat, Josh, you were finally back at training Monday. How was that? The fog rolling in? It's all a bit spooky down there.
It was, yes. Usually I'm used to, accustomed in Adelaide, a little bit better weather over there. The fog rolls out in the mornings, but it was rolling. We could visually see it coming in over us at training. So a little bit different climate down here in Geelong, but it's been a very, very enjoyable period. I know the shutdown's been problematic for us all, but it's been a great move thus far.
How was it getting back, and what were the restrictions for you now with training? Was it seamless in picking up the cudgels again and tackling one another? And
yeah, certainly the contact aspect is because that's the only part of the club which is, or the only part of the program which is normal. So it's very strange to you know, engage in 2 hours of contact work and normal training, match practice, and then immediately walk off the training track and have to really separate. So we had groups in 6 different change rooms getting ready for training and then leaving the training track, and we got to do weights separately. So spending a lot of time with the same small group, and even you know, on our off days, we were doing craft or we're doing some rehab and those things, we're back in our small groups and we've got our own water bottles and things like that. So every single precaution is being taken. So if we can avoid... especially at Geelong, if we can avoid a coronavirus case, we certainly are doing our absolute best.
Josh, I'm interested to ask about, I know you're a good mate of Patrick Dangerfield's and you were good mates in Adelaide, you remain good friends, and he was really keen to get you over to the Cats. How have you observed his performance over the last couple of months? Because he certainly put his head up. And it seems to me that he hasn't always had the support he perhaps needed, and not everyone has been praiseworthy of that performance.
Yeah, for sure. He's copped a lot of criticism. I think the players just in general have copped a lot of criticism because, you know, we've kind of had to not fight, but we've had to negotiate for certain things when other people in the community have had those things taken away. You're talking about money for one, and then working conditions. So, you know, whenever a lot of people have had that taken away from them, and he's the face of us, you know, disputing what we should or shouldn't get paid, he's always going to get whacked for that. And he's been I know it's a challenge for him to, you know, he has paid media spots, and he's one of the best players in the AFL, so people want to hear from him. So I guess whether he needs to be clear or we need to be more understanding of what, you know, which sort of hat he's wearing, whether he's the, you know, the Brownlow medalist Geelong midfielder or he's the speaking as the president of the PA. It's a difficult job, and perhaps he can get a little bit more support from his board members as well, who could probably be a little bit more vocal and handle some of these issues, because, you know, Paul Marsh does a fair bit and he gets cops his right whack a fair bit of the time as well, and Pat does too. So perhaps some of the board members who are senior figures in the game could stand up and give him a chop out.
Did Paul Marsh And Patrick, by extension, do enough for you blokes when the Adelaide camp became exposed. And we won't spend all session on that, but you did bring it up the other day, so I reckon we can throw in a couple more questions. I felt that Paul Marsh was too silent on that and was too quickly listened to just a couple of people at Adelaide. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm happy to admit I sort of not confronted, but I had a strong conversation with Marshy, who I really like and love the way he goes about. My view was that the the players' union were a little bit backward in coming forward, and they didn't really pursue it enough. I think that from their side of things, no one necessarily came to them and complained or said anything. So that's understandable. They probably needed someone to do that, but I think sometimes when there's smoke, there's fire, and you can really, their role sometimes is to really pursue it and find out, get to the bottom of it. So, I certainly had that chat with Marshy, and that's a good thing about him. He'll cop that in the chin, he'll listen, and you just get on with it. So I actually have a really good relationship with Paul.
Do you think Paul's got the full support of the players at the moment, now that they're starting to learn that they're actually losing certain benefits and retirement money? And there seems to be a few mutterings to me among the sort of the brethren of the Players Association, the lower rank members.
Yeah, he probably doesn't, but I don't think he, anyone in that role ever would, because it's basically impossible to satisfy 800 people who we're in a very similar age demographic, but we've all got different needs and different priorities. So for the younger players who have less on their plate to worry about or don't earn as much, pay cuts are handled differently and working conditions are differently, and not being able to play golf affects a golfer more than it affects me, because I don't play golf. So he's never going to be able to satisfy everyone. And in this sort of a situation, he's in a really difficult spot to try and appease half the group, let alone everyone. So in my own view, and I can only speak for myself, I think he does a really good job. I think he'd done a spectacular job in the last pay deal. That was fantastic for players. And the best thing about him is he is approachable. Even if you think, as I said, you think he's let you down or hasn't done something exactly how you want it, he always takes the call and he's approachable. So I appreciate that.
Josh, you came in the same time to Geelong as Jack Stephen. How is he going, and have you spoken to him, and do you have a particular bond with him as someone who's come into the club at the same time where maybe he's confided in you?
Yeah, I certainly noticed. Early days, he was, for someone who's won four best and fairest, I often said to him, he shouldn't be so nervous, especially in the early days of when we were integrating ourselves into the club, and he's just a really nervous sort of guy. And I kept saying to him, you're at least as good as everyone on this list, if not better. So he's a really fun guy to be around. I think everyone who's been in contact with him has said that publicly, that he's a really enjoyable person to be around. He's got a great smile, and he does have great energy. And it's such a unfortunate circumstance, but I think the best thing we can do as teammates is basically allow him to come back to training, and not as if nothing's happened, but you don't want to enter an environment where you've got 40 teammates sort of staring at you wondering what went on. I think from my perspective, I just want to allow him to come back to the club. It's a safe place for him, it's a fun place for him to be, and can get the best out of himself without having to be answerable to everyone. So that's the way I've looked at it, and it's been great to see him. He was here a couple of days this week, and we'll hopefully progress some of his training. So, I just want him to enjoy coming to the footy club, because at the end of the day, if you don't enjoy your workplace, and you may as well not be there.
Josh, how did the group approach that, though? Because so much of football is about trust, and it's the elephant in the room about, what happened. The reluctance to talk and confide to the group about, this is what happened. It was obviously a serious incident. How did the group approach that?
Well, I guess that's an aspect of this, that we haven't been in a setting where we've had the whole group together. Even our first group footy session, we're unable to have a team meeting at all. It's basically just, get out on the field and start warming up. As I said, you're in groups, small groups, the whole time. So There's been no opportunity for anyone, let alone Jack, to sit down and say anything in a group forum. And, you know, I think, as I said, I think that the thing that he would want, I would imagine, and if it was me in that situation, is, you know, yeah, there's curiosity around what happened, but at the end of the day, you just want him to be able to come in and not have to look over his shoulder and feel like everyone's watching him. Just give him that chance to get the best out of himself and enjoy it while he's doing it.
You mentioned him coming in and feeling nervous and talking to him about you're a four-time, you know, best and fairest winner. You shouldn't be nervous. You were also brought across with a role to play. Were you surprised not to play round one?
No, I knew that there would be, you know, not ups and downs, but there'd be periods of the season where I'd be in and out because, you know, often it can come down to what the opposition throw up, and, you know, particularly the Giants had some really fast and nifty running backs, and, you know, to play three talls, which is not a traditional method from Geelong. And the Cats had really good success with their small forwards, Grian Myers and Dalhouse and Gary Ablett last year. So, you know, I'm just going to really roll with the punches, and I was not disappointed at all. I was disappointed a little bit not to play, but I certainly understood it, and that's one thing I must say. You know, Chris Scott and particularly Nigel Lappin as a senior assistant have been really open and honest with me. And when you're, you know, 31 years old, that's all you ask for. You don't want to sort of be kept in the dark. You just want to know where you're at and what, where they see you, and they've been great with that. So, you know, I know a lot gets made of round one, but round two is just as important as round one.
Have you asked Jack about the incident, Josh?
No, I haven't. I saw him. He's actually in our smaller group of seven or eight or however many we've got. And no, I haven't, and I won't, because it's not my place to really to pose that question. And to particularly, as I said, I just have a really strong focus and belief that it's my role as a teammate just to allow him to come to the club and enjoy it and be happy. So I won't really ever ask what happened. If he sees fit to seek me out and tell me, or tell everyone, then so be it. But I'll never ask him.
In the very brief period you were in the football wilderness at the end of last year, you would have briefly contemplated life without AFL footy, even though I think you always sort of felt you'd probably get another crack at it. Has this period over the last 2 months, I know you've done some very interesting interviews about this subject, what do you think about life after footy now? Has it changed from last October, September, October?
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's probably made me think about some different avenues of, you know, I've always been quite keen and willing to get involved in sports journalism, sports casting in one way or another. But it's been really interesting. I've been doing some walking, which is allowed in our exercise part of our lifestyle. Been doing some walking with Nigel Lappin, just bouncing ideas off of each other.
How many steps a day, Josh?
I've set myself 12,000 minimum, but I haven't dropped below 12,000 for about a month.
That's
so
impressive. That's impressive.
I've got a husky who demands at least 15,000, so I don't have a lot of say in the matter. But yeah, I really enjoy, you know, trying to talk to people, especially one-on-one, about, you know, what's really what drives them, what's valuable to them, because I think, you know, a lot of players and a lot of athletes are expected to play for the love of the game, when in reality there's so many different things that drive them. And, you know, whether it's finances, making people proud, making themselves proud, fear of failure, whatever it is, there's different things that drive different people. And I think if you understand that yourself, then you can truly start to succeed and develop and be happy with what you've done. Because, you know, I'm not going to play 300 AFL games, and, you know, it's very unlikely I'll play in three premierships. But that's not to say that, you know, you haven't had a good career, because, you know, anyone who basically plays one AFL game has done really well and has done more than most. So I just have a bit of a passion for particularly in the one-on-one setting, talking to people and talking to young athletes about what drives them and what they really want to get out of it.
So what have you learned from Nigel?
Basically just that. He was the one who really opened my eyes to, you know, whether it's a you know, it's a pie in the sky idea at the moment, but whether it's, you know, sort of consulting with young athletes, and, you know, I've still got a great passion for basketball, and whether it's just sitting down and talking to them about what, you know, as I said, what makes life important. And Nigel's a deep thinker and, you know, loves helping young players. He's a brilliant coach. He's, you know, I've seen him, witnessed him just continually work with young players at Geelong. And there's a reason he's been there so long and is so highly credentialed, because he just cares so much about people. So, you know, if I can take some of that from him and translate it to my own, you know, life after footy, I think I'll be in a better place.
Now, I know you mentioned basketball, Josh. I take it you're one of the 750 AFL players that watched the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance.
Yes.
Have you thought about the possibility your first year at Geelong, Gary Ablett's probably almost certainly last year, Gazza's the last dance for Gary Ablett and what maybe a premiership?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's so many. I think, you know, it's almost irrespective of the team, there's one or two or three storylines from an individual point of view where if that team were to win the premiership, how amazing and how great of a story would that be? And, you know, for us, that's Ablett, that's you know, Danger, who hasn't won a premiership as well, and, you know, that's guys like, you know, myself, whoever would be involved, there's great stories. It's Joel Selwood or, you know, winning his fourth, and you look across the competition. So that's the beauty of the fact that we're hopefully going to have a season, because I, you know, I do hear a lot of talk about a, you know, an asterisk on the premiership. Well, in my view, if everyone starts, you know, and has a similar grounding, then there should be no asterisks. If we're all playing for the same thing, then it's, you know, it's a legitimate premiership. And if it's won by us, then that's fantastic.
Tell me how you found Joel Selwood as a leader.
Yeah, I was really interested in, you know, I was intrigued to see how he and I would mesh. You know, he's not an intimidating person, but he's got an intimidating resume, and you hear a lot about, you know, his, you hear a lot about the demand that, you know, Geelong in the past players would place on each other. You know, you hear a lot about Matthew Scarlett, you know, telling Gary Ablett, you know, get, you know, start training hard and you can be the best player, blah, 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 those sorts of things. And, you know, there's a little bit of intimidation coming in, but Joel's hasn't surprised me. But the thing that overrides any of that for Joel is he just cares so much about everyone. And I don't mean Jordan Clark, who's a second year player from Western Australia. I mean the people at the club who work in the kitchen and who work upstairs. His care for everyone across the club is just, you know, it's unlike anything I've seen in footy. And you know, he there's just nothing that he's not willing to do to help the club. You know, he came when I was first few months here, I came down to the AFLW game, we were rattling the tins for the bushfire appeal, and he just come down off his own bat. No one knew he was coming, and he just started, you know, threw the t-shirt on and was just getting involved. And there's just nothing that he's not willing to do for the team and for the club as a whole. And, you know, that's not uncommon for players to be, you know, to help, for leaders to be willing to help everyone, but it usually stops at the players and coaches. But for him, he just is across everyone. He's got a great memory too. He never forgets someone that he's met. So, you know, he met my little daughter once, and he just never forgets her name. He's got a great ability to remember everyone that he comes in contact with.
That is a particularly impressive skill. But Josh, were you doubly apprehensive, if not intimidated, about meeting Joel, knowing you had the support of Danger in coming over, but the manner of leaving Adelaide and him and Joel as a strong leader and as an assertive personality in having to establish and clear the air with the group about this is what I'm like and don't believe what you may have read or heard or whispered, take me as I am?
Yeah, I think that's the absolute beauty of the club. And I've had great, you know, insight. I feel like I've, you know, myself, Paddy and Tommy Lynch, that, you know, we were an inseparable trio over in Adelaide. And since Pat moved to Geelong, I've sort of felt like I've had, you know, one foot in the door already, because, you know, Pat would compare the two clubs, and he'd often talk about how the Cats do things a little bit differently to most teams. And I certainly had apprehension about, you know, how I'd be perceived, and a lot of chatter around the way I left the Crows. But The Cats simply don't care about how you got here. All they care about is what you do whilst you're here, and Joel drives that more than anyone. So, you know, it certainly eased my mind had a phone call with him. I think he was over in Tokyo or somewhere in the off season, and gave me a call, and we just chatted, just really generally. We chatted like we'd been friends for 5 years, and that was his final message. You know, I don't care what's happened, where you've come from, what you've done, you know, it's good or bad. All he cares about and all the club cares about is what you can do in a positive manner whilst you're there. So that was refreshing to hear, and certainly took a bit of load off my shoulders.
Josh, did you feel, without going over Adelaide too much, did you feel, as someone who spoke fairly frankly about the things that weren't so good with the camp, that almost rebounded on you when it came to trade and in terms of clubs seeking you, that it was almost like your frankness internally hurt you a little bit in the eyes of other clubs? I don't know if you feel that, but
yeah, probably not so much. Well, I honestly wouldn't know. It's you know, I have no knowledge of what other clubs' sort of view of me is, so I don't know. But it certainly come back to bite me. But sometimes you know, the way you conduct yourself is more important than sort of how that sort of stuff plays out. So you know, even if I had have ended up outside of the AFL system for this year, I would have still been able to put my head on the pillow and be proud of the way I conducted myself. And were there certain times where I could have went about things differently, for sure, but I don't think there's anyone in any line of work who could say they do things correctly every day. So, you know, I'm proud of the way that, you know, I stood up for people and spoke up for people at important times, just like, you know, Tom Lynch was a really driving force and continues to be over there as well. And so, you know, it didn't end up great. But as I've said, you know, I say to my wife all the time, we had 8 years in Adelaide, and six and a half of them were fantastic, and one of them, you know, was a down year. And if you had offered that to me at the end of 2010, I'm pretty sure I'd take it.
Do you have a question or comment for the team? Send us an email, realfootypod@theage.com.au.
Josh, just moving on now to broader footy issues, the fixtures out, you've got Hawthorn Friday night. You'd be aware of the rivalry between the two clubs, but I suppose your keener rivalry was with Port Adelaide rather than a Victorian team. You've got that game down at Geelong. Or will there be home ground advantage to that without a crowd, given the dimensions of the ground?
Yeah, well, having played here as an opponent, my view is that there will be, you know, I think there'll be some level of advantage for us, and probably some of the grounds, which are more about the environment, more so than the actual dimensions of the stadium. You know, Perth Stadium is the same size as the MCG, I believe, but it's more about the environment that you're playing. You know, you've got, you know, the Purple Haze or West Coast 55,000 fans in the stadium. So that's probably going to be mitigated a little bit if we eventually play over in WA. But whereas the thing about Geelong, it wasn't the size of the stadium or the amount of people that were in there. It was purely about the size of the ground. It was narrow. You couldn't sort of move the ball out wide, and you couldn't shift the ball. And often teams coming out of defence would kick the ball out of bounds because it was so narrow. So hopefully not speaking out of school and giving away any tactics, but I'd like to think that it will be an advantage because, you know, those guys have trained down there and play down there, and there's a reason that, you know, they don't get beaten down there very often.
But what about the alternative theory that maybe you'd be better off playing more games at the MCG because your record there hasn't been so good in finals in recent years?
Yeah, well, I guess that's relevant as well. Whether you putting the cart before the horse, worrying about, you know, your record in finals, and you've got to get there first. So which line you want to take first? But you know, that's probably relevant. But I mean, I've seen Geelong and watched Geelong win plenty of big games at the MCG against Hawthorn and Easter Monday, and I've seen them play some good footy in finals as well there. So you know, it's horses for courses. You play it, you know, wherever you think's most advantageous at the time, and then you deal with the rest later on. But again, perhaps taking one for Scotty, perhaps if there's no crowds, we can play the finals down there.
Oh, that'd
as well.
Be right. You're showing in your Geelong colours.
They got you quickly, haven't they?
I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Hey, Josh, where do you stand on shorter games, shorter quarters?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of shortening the game at all. I think that's part of the beauty and the unique challenge from a playing perspective is we play a game which goes for the longest amount of time on the biggest surface with the most people, and I think that's really unique and something we should really cherish. And if there's a massive push from fans, I think they deserve probably the biggest say. But if there's a massive push from fans and they're getting sick of the game, they're walking out early because it goes for too long, well, that's one thing. But I think it's a unique part of our game is that quarters go for 31, 32 minutes, and you've got to be able to drive yourself to the very end of the game and to perform. And, you know, I saw some stuff about it. You know, if we shorten the game, then certain things won't happen. But, you know, I think we just got to continue to take on that aspect of the game where it does go for a long time, but it's a challenge for everyone, but mainly for us as players to be able to continue to strive forward. And sometimes it's a war of attrition and sort of last team standing, and I love that aspect.
Could you play those longer games and have the sort of fixture that we've now seen, which is, you know, Sunday to Thursday or Thursday to Sunday every week, backing up 5-day breaks? Could you be playing that length of game and backing up that soon and that regularly?
Yeah, I think you could, because the only thing you'd have to monitor is just or change a little bit is your training. But and I look at it, and I know Caro's not a big fan of the Americanisms in the game, but in the NFL they have a certain number of contact trainings per week. So if we limit the season to say 12 full on contact sessions for footy training during the week, then I reckon we could back up and we could play. Because I think what gets lost a little bit and forgotten because people don't get to see it is, you know, on a Wednesday each week we're not doing the same volume, but we're still doing the same contact and the same change of direction and acceleration and all that kind of stuff to get us ready for the next game, and that probably takes a little bit of tread off the tire. So if we sort of limit that a little bit and we're not able to train twice a week contact, I reckon we could keep the games long and we could still play quite frequently. That's my view anyway.
Josh, who should be elevated as legend to the Hall of Fame out of the following? Wayne Carey. This is if there's only one this year. Wayne Carey.
Yep.
Gary Ablett Sr. Jason Dunstall. Bearing in mind all of the factors,
I'm going to say Jason Dunstall. I'm probably too young to give a real true opinion because I didn't see the guys play live week to week. I basically just going off of their highlights and their records. But I love Jason's opinion, and I love the way that he played the game. He obviously kicked a lot of goals, and he wouldn't be out of place in a place like that. So I'm happy to nominate him. And even though he may have slid into Adelaide last year and said, "Get rid of this fella," when he reviewed the club, I love the way he goes about it, and be more than happy to see him elevated.
Do you actually think that's what he said?
No, of course not. No. Well, I hope not. But if he did, I'll change my vote.
We'll turn it back on you and Jake and Caro. Who would you put up this year?
Definitely Jason Dunstall. His record's unbelievable. He went on to play a major role in resurrecting the Hawthorn Football Club. Wayne Carey, probably, you know, the most unbelievable centre-half forward who's ever played the game. And he'd be second, and Gary Ablett third. I was on the selection committee that put Gary Ablett into the Hall of Fame, and I didn't agree with it at the time, and I still don't.
Yeah, well, it's got to be Dunstall or Carey, and you've got to have them. They're much easier decisions for the committee than Gary Senior. Sorry, that's Carey or Jason. And does it matter, Caro, having sat on the committee, because I don't know this, that Jason retired before Wayne? So that is that a consideration in making that decision, or if they're more or less even?
Not really. Not really. It might be thrown up and someone might argue that, but not really, no. Come on, Jake, give us an answer.
Well, I want to see Wayne there, so I'll say Wayne. Even though...
Fair enough.
They're all going to end up there. The thing is, all three are going to be legends, Caro. I cannot conceive that any of those won't be legends. So it's a matter of the order, and I think that it's I think Wayne is
not so sure about Gary Ablett, Jake, but certainly the other two, certainly.
If you're in the Hall of Fame, if you've made that decision that you part that what you've done off the field and away from the game that held you out of the Hall of Fame for so long, Caro, has been overlooked and accepted now that we're going to bring you into the Hall of Fame, why should it be an impediment then to go to legend status? You're either in or you're out.
You've asked me my opinion.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't agree with the decision to put him in the first place.
Yeah.
So I then certainly don't think he should be a legend. And I think that a legend is such a massive, biggest step. I mean, we were always told by John Kennedy Sr., who chaired the committee in the early days, it is a name synonymous with the great game of football and a great of the game. Yes, Gary Ablett was that, but some of the stuff that happened off the field just to me means he shouldn't get in as a legend.
Ever.
No.
All right. Well, that is all we have time for this episode. Thanks to both. Thanks to you, Josh, and to Jake and Caro for joining us. And thanks to Channel 7 and Channel 10 for the audio we've used in this episode. If you want to get in touch, you can email us at the address realfootypod@theage.com.au or give us a call on 03-8667-1235. Thanks, as always, for listening, and we'll catch you next time. Thank you, guys.
Thanks Michael. All the best with the season, Josh. See you, Jake.
Thank you.